This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Bernie Sanders, typically this hour is our Brunch with Bernie hour, and at some point it will be. He is in Vermont for a funeral of a Vermont soldier who died in Iraq, and the funeral was supposed to be finished by now, or his part of it, so that he could be with us on the program, and it's running a little behind. So he's going to call in as soon as he has finished his eulogy, and that might be in 2 or 3 minutes, it might be 5 or 10 minutes. It may turn out that he doesn't show up. I frankly doubt that, but he is putting the family of that fallen soldier appropriately first. And he goes to those funerals in Vermont. God bless him for it. And so we'll see, as you know, whether Bernie shows up today. A lot in the news. Obviously, the war vote last night in the House of Representatives, not a majority that can override a veto, but a majority. And it's going to the Senate, and we'll see what will happen in the Senate. Frankly, you know, there is this point that they don't, the Democrats in the House of Representatives and the Senate, and this is where I think that they blew it big time. What, 3 months ago, was it? 2 months ago, when they voted to fund the war for another year. They don't need a majority. They don't need 67 votes. They don't need a veto-proof majority in the Senate. Let's just talk about the Senate for a second. They don't need 60 votes, a filibuster-proof majority. They don't need 51 votes, an absolute majority. All they need are 40 votes to simply say, no, we're not going to write a check. Now, by the way, that's what they're doing to fund Dick Cheney's office until he comes along and says, okay, I am part of the executive branch and I will comply with the laws about it, because Dick Cheney is violating the laws that have to do with the executive branch by claiming that he's part of the Dick branch or whatever. I guess I think that's what he's calling it now. And or if he's not, I am. And so that's frankly the strategy that I think that the Democrats should be following and employing, but they're not. They're instead trying to pursue some sort of a rapprochement with the Bush administration, some sort of compromise. And I guess the question for a lot of the Democrats, and this is, I think, genuinely the question that they're struggling with, is whether they were elected to end the war by cutting off the funding in a drastic and rapid and immediate fashion, which they could do, or whether they were elected to end the war. This is all assuming that there's a consensus that the voters spoke in 2006 and said end the war, or whether they were elected to end the war by working in a more traditional and bipartisan way with the Bush administration to, you know, gradually bring the war to an end. Or not necessarily gradually, you know, ideally even immediately, but as, you know, in that case, it's going to require more than a handful of Republicans to come along. And frankly, I think that the Democratic Party or the Democratic leadership is really agonizing over this. I don't think that they know the answer to the question. And I'm not sure that I know the answer to the question. I'm not sure that there is an answer to the question. I think among those of us who are very activist and who are very progressive, you know, the answer is obviously very clear. Cut off the funding. It's simple. You can do it with 40 votes. You can do it right now. You know, in 40 votes in the Senate out of 100. You have a majority in the House. You can simply say, no, we're not going to vote on this thing. We're not going to send any money to Bush until he says, okay, that money will be used to redeploy the forces, to use the congressman from, you know, Jack Murtha's from Pennsylvania's language. So, you know, we'll see how this shakes out. But there's more votes coming and there's more time coming. And of course, letting them hear from you will, you know, I think that's a good and important thing. A couple of things in the news today that are really, really worth noting that I guarantee you will not be covered at all by the mainstream media. Guarantee. This will not be on the CBS Evening News, ABC, NBC, CNBC, MSNBC, CNN. None of them are going to touch this. And yet, this is a big deal. In fact, today, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, to the best of my knowledge, did not touch this, although it is on page 2, at the top of the page, in the Financial Times of London, which is, by the way, a worldwide and international newspaper. I mean, I literally get a copy, a physical copy of it here every morning. Here in Portland, Oregon, they deliver it. And that is that in Germany, they're having a very robust debate about whether they should do something in Germany that is similar to laws that were on the books in Germany as recently as 25, 30 years ago that have been on the books in Japan since the end of World War II and still are, that are by and large on the books in South Korea, in Thailand, in many other countries around the world, which have to do with whether or not they're going to allow their economic infrastructure to be sold off to foreign corporations or foreign governments. This is a major issue, and frankly, it's not going to be discussed because so many of our American companies have been sold off. But here's the story from the Financial Times. Pressure mounted yesterday on Angela Merkel, the Prime Minister of Germany, to enact legislation allowing the government to block investments by foreign state-controlled investors, as senior conservative politicians warned the German chancellor about the risks facing Europe's largest economy. As Volker Rauder, parliamentary leader for Ms. Merkel's Christian Democratic Union, the CDU, that's their political party, as he said, this is about protecting important industrial sectors from the political influence of other states. You get that? I mean, this is a big deal. Ms. Merkel, again from the Financial Times, Ms. Merkel warned last week that large German companies could fall into the hands of foreign and possibly hostile states through investments by sovereign wealth funds and public sector companies. Morgan Stanley puts the total assets of Chinese, Russian, and Middle Eastern state-controlled funds at $2,500 billion. That's $1.25 trillion. By leveraging, these funds could finance acquisitions worth 10 times as much, the finance ministry has said. So that would be $12.5 trillion in the hands of state-controlled funds in China, Russia, and the Middle East that could come into Germany and buy up corporations that are, in the opinion of the Germans, vital to the functioning of Germany as an independent democracy. Ms. Merkel warned last week. Oh, that's the paragraph I just read. Aides to Ms. Merkel say she is concerned about a risk to national security if, say, parts of the country's energy infrastructure fell into the hands of investors guided by political rather than commercial imperatives. What if China comes into Germany and buys up the privatized power companies? What if Saudi Arabia comes into Germany and buys up the privatized power companies? What if Russia comes into Germany and buys up the privatized power companies? What if they come into America and buy up our privatized power companies? I mean, we have already sold off so much of America. You can find all the stats over at economyandcrisis.org. Our sound recording industries are foreign-owned 97%. Our commodity contracts dealing in brokerage industry. Now, you would think, I mean, this is commodities. This is, you know, corn, wheat, soybeans, gold, oil, the companies that trade in this stuff. You would think that these are American companies. 79% of the commodity contracts dealing brokerage companies in the United States are owned by foreign entities. 75% of the motion picture and sound recording industry. 65% of all metal ore mining companies in the United States owned by foreign companies or foreign countries. 64% of the motion picture industry. 64% of the wineries and distilleries. 63% of all the database, directory, and other publishing companies in the United States. 63% of all our book publishing companies. So the Germans right now are debating whether they're going to allow the same thing to happen in Germany. And Angela Merkel is saying, no, she doesn't want to allow it to happen. They want to have legislation to, quote, protect, end quote, the German economy from the possibility of $12.5 trillion in funds controlled by Chinese, Russian, and Middle Eastern state-controlled investment funds going in and buying up critical infrastructure in Germany. This is globalism absolutely crazily run amok. She says, we don't want to go down the French route and have to declare Haribo and Gummy Bear and other strategic assets. Oh, this is the other side basically saying, no, you don't want to do this. This is their defense against having PepsiCo come in and buy up one of their companies. Bernie Sanders is with us. He'll be up next, 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
It's like everything and nothing needs some wisdom. It's like no one really meant what they meant. It's like every man's a king, every house a kingdom. It's like Joe McCarthy was our acting president. Everything's A-okay in the USA, in the good old USA.
Well, we're moving it in that direction. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, congratulations to Nora, who was blogging over at airamerica.com. Click on Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman Show on airamerica.com, and it'll get you to the blog there. And Nora's entry on the blog yesterday was the one that tickled our fancy, and she's getting a copy, a signed copy of Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class, and What We Can Do About It. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Bernie Sanders, welcome.
Good to be with you, Tom, and my apologies for not being at the first segment, but I'm here at Arlington National Cemetery here. There's a ceremony here today for a young Vermonter who was killed, whose ashes are going to be interned this weekend. So that's what I had to do.
It's a tough one.
It's a tough one. And, you know, I think back over the years that I've done the show and how often I've had to be at funerals. And my small state of Vermont has just lost more soldiers per capita than any other state in the country. And it just speaks to the terrible toll that this war is taking.
So what are we going to do about it, Bernie?
Well, if I had my way, we're going to bring these troops home as soon as possible and develop an entirely new approach to the very serious problem of fighting international terrorism. I think clearly that Bush's policies from day one to today have been a disaster. And not only have they caused so much suffering in terms of death, in terms of wounded, in terms of cost, in terms of lowering our standard, how people feel about us all over the world, but what they are also doing, in fact, is turning people against us and making people more prone, I think, to take up arms or join, you know, Bin Laden's fanaticism. We need an approach which says to poor people all over the world, especially in the Muslim world, we are on your side, not Osama bin Laden, not fanatics. We are going to work with you to improve your standard of living, to build schools, to provide health care to your kids, and we want to work with you. And I think we need a radical change in our attitude in that respect, because this war against terrorism is not just going to be won with tanks and guns.
Yeah. And the House yesterday voted without a veto-proof majority, but voted to require the president to start bringing back troops by
right.
April.
And the Senate will take up the vote, I believe, next week. What will likely happen is we'll get, I'm not sure, somewhere between 53, 56, 57 votes. We're climbing up to the magic number of 60. But the important point here is, as the media, in fact, has been reporting, is that Bush's support among Republicans in the Senate is getting weaker and weaker. You're seeing people like Voinovich of Ohio. You're seeing other people beginning to say enough is enough. And I think as you become closer to Election Day, you're going to see more and more Republicans saying, sorry, Mr. President, we can't continue this path.
And It's Mitch McConnell, isn't he the guy essentially who is quote filibustering end quote?
Yeah.
I mean, doesn't there has to be one senator who's the point guy on filibustering?
Well, McConnell is the leader of the Republicans in the Senate, and I guess he's the guy who is doing it. But the point is I know listeners know is 51 votes doesn't do it. You need 60 votes to stop debate, to end the filibuster, and the Republicans have made it very clear that despite what the American people want, despite a common sense of decency in allowing us to have a vote, they are going to keep filibustering. Now, I think the antidote to that has got to be to the Democratic leadership saying, fine, you want to talk? We're going to talk, and we're going to talk, and we're going to talk, and we're going to vote, and we're going to vote, and we're going to talk some more until we get a vote, till you allow us to have a vote with majority rules. And I think, you know, that's kind of the approach that we need to take.
But why aren't the Democrats yelling and screaming in the media that Mitch McConnell is filibustering? Why aren't they doing
that? They are trying to do that, Tom.
Give us an up and down.
Believe me, if it is not getting out, it is not through lack of effort. I do know. They are using that word over and over again. And the American people have got to understand that. This is a filibuster. I think what they are trying to do is, if the vote were to take place tomorrow, I'm guessing, as I said before, between 53, 56, 57 votes. So we would win by a nice majority, and then the president would be in the position of having to veto this again. And apparently what they want to do is run interference for the president and allow this vote not to take place. But everybody should understand, the vote on what we call cloture, ending debate, is, for all intent and purposes, the vote on the war.
Yeah. Do you think that the Senate or the House are going to start holding some of these folks, Sarah Taylor, Harriet Myers, in contempt?
I think you are seeing a growing anger and frustration on the part of various chairmen, whether it's Leahy in the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, John Conyers in the House, who are saying, are going to remind the President of the United States what he did not know for 6 years, and that is, there is a separation of powers. There is a constitution in this country, and the administration is not above the law. And if Congress asks these people to come in to testify, you cannot claim this broad mantle of executive privilege. You've got to respond to what Congress wants to hear.
Yeah, good, good. And great on the Surgeon General stuff. You can tell us about that after the break,
sure.
And then we'll take calls. 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, taking your calls at 866-303-2270. Drop by our live chat room. Find it all over at airamerica.com. Click on Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Let's be the good guys again. We're going down the wrong road, my friend. Let's return our nation to its true destination. Let's be the good guys again.
Definitely sounds like a plan. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, the independent from Vermont. I think of him as America's senator. And, Bernie, we've got a whole board full of callers. I know you can only be with us this one segment, that at about 1:45, you've got to leave. But, before we go to the calls, your committee was grilling the former Surgeon General, and
right.
I just wanted to ask you about that.
Well, what happened is, the former, Surgeon General, which is a very important position, he is America's doctor. His name was Dr. Carmona. He came forward after his four-year tenure with the Bush administration and basically said, I was censored, I was muzzled, there were occasions when they forced me, their speechwriters forced me, if you could believe this, Tom, to mention George Bush's name 3 times on every page. This is in the United States of America. And now
this is like the Politburo, you know?
Well, as a matter of fact, that's exactly what I said. It sounded very much like Stalinist Russia. And then Bush has nominated as his new Surgeon General a gentleman named Dr. Holsinger from Kentucky. And my line of questioning was not so much about the gentleman's qualifications, which are good qualifications, or about him personally, but whether or not he is prepared to stand up to the President of the United States and say, as Surgeon General, I'm not there as a tool for right-wing extremism. I'm not here to ignore science or ignore medical theory and just tout your extremist position. I'm here to be America's physician. Are you prepared to do that? And he really did not give me a convincing enough response to tell me that he was going to be independent of the political machinery of the Bush administration. I've made it public that I will not be voting for him to become Surgeon General. We need somebody to say, what happened to Dr. Carmona was an outrage. I will not live by those rules. I will speak out freely. on the important health care issues facing the American people.
Yeah, and I understand that legislation is being prepared in either the House or Senate to basically separate the Surgeon General's office from political consideration.
But
it's a shame we should have to.
The point here is we got a glimpse of what goes on inside that White House. Can you imagine a Surgeon General having to deal with the important medical issues facing the American people, being told where he could go? He wanted to go to a Special Olympics, and they told, no, you can't go there because that is the Kennedy family started that. We don't want to make them look good. Can you believe that?
Right.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
beyond belief. So we will see what happens on his nomination, but I am not going to vote for him. I will not vote for anybody who is not prepared to stand up to the Bush administration.
Good on you. Good on you. Patrick, let's take some calls here. Patrick in Riverside, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Patrick, you're live with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Senator Sanders. Grateful for everything you both do. I just had a comment when that Hindu preacher made the Senate invocation the other morning.
Yeah.
And the conservative Christian activists heckled him.
Yeah.
I was so disgusted by what they did, and it was such a beautiful invocation, by the way. It was non-denominational. I called their Dallas headquarters, and I didn't get an answer, but the answering machine kicked in, and the message starts off with, welcome to Operation Save America and Operation Save Walmart. And I couldn't believe my ears. I thought, what, Jesus shops at Walmart?
Oh, my goodness. Man. Well, I was not on the floor at the time, and I read about it later. But, you know, you have these people who want to divide us in 100 different ways by where we came from, where we worship, if we worship. And believe me, that is not saving America. That is exactly opposite what this country stands for. What our history and what our strength is we bring people together. We respect diversity. And obviously the behavior of those people was totally unacceptable.
Yeah, indeed. Richard in Jackson, Tennessee, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, I was wondering, Bernie Sanders, Senator, you do a great job in your voting for the people. Back when the Republicans held Congress, they kept on threatening weak-kneed Harry Reid whenever they wanted to filibuster with the nuclear option. Could you tell me what that is and why we don't use it now that the Democrats have Congress?
Well, what the so-called nuclear option is essentially ending the 60-vote cloture rule. And that would mean saying that 51 votes would make the decision, and the debate could not go on until we got 60 votes to stop it. That's what the nuclear option is about, and that was threatened during the Supreme Court nomination that they would do that. You know, it is I'm not a historian on these. You've had these rules in the Senate forever. It used to be, Tom, if I'm not mistaken, 66 votes, right? End the debate.
I think so, yeah. And now that started back in the early 1800s. Then I think they went to 60 votes in the mid-20th century.
Richard, I can't, you know, my guess is, you know, if that's used here, we'll, you know, if Reid decided to do that, Republicans would do it the next time they came in office, and we'd have to take a long, hard look to see whether that was in the best interests of the country. But I think where we are right now is I think we have the support of the American people to end this war. I think the disgust is growing, not just among progressives, but among conservatives. I think the immediate task is to hold those Republicans accountable. And what you're seeing, Tom, and it is very interesting, is more and more of the Republican senators who are coming up for election are taking a very hard look at this vote, at the war.
So every one of them except for Susan Collins, I think, was, you know, who has all of the senators who have come out against the war are up for re-election.
So we've got to keep up the pressure, and I think if we do that, I think the momentum is with us. I think Bush is looking awful. I think he's looking defensive, and I think the American people are seeing through that.
Amen. Marianne in Arcata, California, you're on the air with Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Hartman and Senator Bernie Sanders. I want to ask you about the Niger forgeries, and what's the follow-up on that? Is that still going on?
Sure. What you're beginning to see is after 6 years of having a rubber-stamp Congress where no hard questions were asked, you're seeing many committees taking a very hard look at how we got into Iraq in the first place. And what you're talking about is the situation where the Bush administration was claiming that Iraq was getting yellow cake uranium from Niger. Turned out to be a major forgery. So I think what you are seeing, Marianne, is many committees looking at the many aspects of what the Bush administration did to lead us into war. And I hope and suspect that will be one of the issues covered.
Dave in Los Angeles, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom and Bernie. It's a pleasure to talk to you guys. I love your show. My question goes back to the bill on bringing the troops home and the fact that there's 10 Democrats that voted against the bill. And my question is...
In the House of Representatives.
Hello?
Yeah.
In the House of Representatives, yeah.
In the House, yeah. I mean, it seems like we voted them in office to actually end this war, and we've got some of them are still, you know, voting the wrong way. I just want to get your take
on that. Well, in fairness to the House, the problem is in the Senate. They, even though there were Democrats who voted, in my view, the wrong way, what we're having in the Senate now is we still need to turn around more Republicans. So I think, you know, every constituent has got to make a choice about his or her representative and whether they're satisfied or whether they're going to support that representative based on that vote or any other vote. But my concern right now is that the House actually passed the bill. The Senate has not yet passed the bill. We are probably three or four votes, Republican votes, away from that. And we've got to target those people and go after those people and finally convince them to vote to end cloture.
Dave in Royal Oak, Michigan. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Bernie. Hi, Tom. I've begun my first letter to my representative, Sandra Levin, and I've called two times. I've done this on the urging of both of you. I've been sort of a passive member of society up till now in terms of politics. And I'm happy about that, but at the same time, very frustrated that I have to do that. I'm a well-paid member of the service economy, and I'm well-paid because I work independently, and I don't need supervision. And I'm frustrated that the top people in our society, the people with the best pensions, that they don't have to work hard at what they do. These representatives we have, why do the American people have to supervise them?
Okay, Dave, okay. Let me approach your question from a different point of view. First of all, trust me, the vast majority of members in the Senate and the House, whatever their point of view is, work hard and they work long hours. It's not a question of having the American people supervise them. We live in a democracy. The job of an elected official is not to be is to represent the needs of people. And the essential problem with Washington, D.C. right now is that you have enormous power resting in the hands of big money interests who make huge campaign contributions, who have lobbyists knocking on doors every single day. And what needs to happen if we're going to make progressive change in this country, not only on the war, but on a national health care program, on dealing so that we can send all of our kids to college and they don't come out deeply in debt, on many of the pressing issues facing the middle class, we need a significant mobilization, a real mobilization, and political activism on the part of ordinary people. That's called the democratic process. That's not called supervision. I mean, it is having the American people, working people, standing up and saying, we want government to represent everybody and not just the wealthy and the powerful. So I applaud you for getting involved, and we need more of it.
Yeah, Bernie, thanks so much for being with us. I know you have to run now.
Okay, Tom.
We really appreciate it.
Okay.
Senator Bernie Sanders. What's the website, Bernie? Oh, he's gone. Okay, 45 minutes past the hour. Our website, airamerica.com. Click on Tom Hartman and participate in our blog.
Truth in Broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
If it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side that he'd be on. He never was a hero for this county's shining light, but you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right. He'd say, you've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything.
And that's the message we need to convey to our elected representatives. Increasingly, the number The telephone number for Congress, you want to call your member of the House or Senate, 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121. And I got to tell you, I think Louise has gone too far on the blog over at the Air America. This is, if you go over to airamerica.com and click on my name, it'll take you to our page there on the Air America site. And you can see Louise's blog, our daily blog. And as every day, we'll pick, you know, David's going to pick his favorite blog entry today, and we'll send a book to that person. But Louise has suggested a topic to comment on. What jobs do you think people should be holding instead of the jobs they actually hold? You know, and she points to a blog who, a guy who's come up with a long list of really interesting ones. Like Tucker Carlson is a nightclub pole dancer. Larry King as a Walmart greeter from hell. Me as president of the United States? No way. I keep telling everyone I just want to be a talk radio host. I get to say anything I want. I don't have to wake up like our members of the Senate and the House do every morning wondering how I'm going to raise $20,000 that day. No, it's so anyhow, if you have ideas about jobs other people should be holding, you can drop by our blog there at airamerica.com and click on my name and post them. John in Chandler, Arizona. Listening on KPHX. Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, Tom, love your show. Hey, a couple questions. While Bernie was talking, I noticed he mentioned something about, you know, we need to work on providing health care for the Muslim world. It's like, hey, what about the 45 million people here in the United States that don't have health care?
Oh, and he's all over that and has been for you know, 18 years. He's been pushing for national health care, single-payer national health care.
Right, and then Tom, hey, I just got a couple questions here, real quick. My first question is, I honestly don't understand. Since this Bush administration thinks that they are above the law, I don't understand why nothing gets done. I seriously don't understand why we have laws, judges, and policemen. Because if we're not going to have this Bush administration abide by the law, I don't understand. I don't understand Pelosi's why she's not impeaching anything. I'm happy. I'm really glad that Cindy Sheehan is going to try to boot her out, and maybe she's going to do something. I am just a frustrated American, I'm sure with others, and I don't understand why nothing gets done. Just yesterday alone, this guy got arrested for stealing a bag of chips, and I'm just thinking to myself, you know what? If that's the only bad thing he's done, it's sad. It's just a sad day in America.
Yeah, and he's not Scooter Libby, so he's not going to get a commutation of his sentence. John, you make a good point. On the other hand, I think it's really important that we also keep in mind the fact that the Democrats have taken the House and Senate. They have passed some very, very significant legislation. They are doing serious and aggressive investigations. There's a very real possibility that Harriet Myers and Sarah Taylor will be held in contempt of Congress, and boy, would I love to see that happen. You know, a serious contempt citation where they you know, frog marched them off to jail. I mean, they actually have the authority to do that. We'll
right.
see.
And Tom, I got one more thing too, Tom.
Yeah. Yeah, you're still there.
Yeah, and Tom, another thing too that I really would like to encourage everybody that I've just started doing is every time I'm like at a gas station and I see a car that has "We support, you know, support our troops" magnet, I always question them. I always question them. Oh, how do you support the troops?
Right, exactly. And the answer is, I bought a bumper sticker made in China. You know, or I bought a refrigerator magnet made in China and stuck it on my car. I mean, that's about the, or I drive an SUV, and so I'm sending a lot of money to Saudi Arabia so that they can pay for more jihadis to go fight, to go blow up our troops. That's the tragedy of it. Brian in Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Tom. I was hoping to get on with Barry, but I'm sorry, with Bernie, but I wanted to follow up on his point. He mentioned something about the message of the Republican obstruction not really reaching the American public. And I think it's one thing for the Democrats to have right on their side, but how do we impress upon our representatives to speak out with passion about this obstructionist policy that these Republicans have taken?
Well, Bernie's point was that they are, and that it's just not being covered by the corporate media. And I suspect that, well, I don't suspect that he's right. I believe him. And that you know, there's probably, you know, dozens of members of the House and Senate, perhaps, you know, hundreds. I mean, you know, who in a heartbeat would grab a microphone and rail about the obstruction that's going, the filibuster. Bernie said, you know, the Democrats are really upset and they're using that word filibuster, and it's simply not being reported.
Well, I think there has to be some passion behind what they say, Tom.
I'm sure there is. The problem is it doesn't make it through the media filter. the mainstream media is not picking this stuff up. I mean, they very much cherry pick their stories, and they cherry pick their stories to what is to the very best interests of the largest corporations in America, who also happen to own the mainstream media. And that means that, you know, by and large, Republicans get a pass and Democrats don't. Well, but the bottom line is that the Democrats are raising hell about this, and they are calling it a filibuster, and we all need to be pointing that out. And frankly, I think everybody should be calling Mitch McConnell's office at 202-225-3121 and saying, you know, we don't want you to filibuster this thing. Stop the filibuster. I mean, there's a petition over at 620kpoj.com for this, and there's other petitions going around to do this, to stop the filibuster. And I think that's just a really important thing. We need to get that message out. We need to get it out as broadly and as widely as we can, that this is a filibuster, that Mitch McConnell is blocking this, that they have more than 50 votes in the Senate to start bringing our troops back home starting in April or before then. And the Republicans are blocking it. And 22 of these Republicans are up for re-election. And it's time to start calling them out. So in particular, if you live in a state where you're represented by a Republican in the United States Senate, even one of the ones who have said, okay, we'll go along with this, call that Republican senator and say, enough already. Get your leadership. Get Mitch McConnell to stop the filibuster. And the telephone number is 202-225-3121 for Congress. And then there's a bunch of 800 numbers floating around all over the place. It's Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls on a whole variety of topics right after this. Stick around. 57 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio. Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Welcome to the Democracy Zone.
Welcome back to the second hour of our program. Well, let's see. Bill O'Reilly, wind-powered turbine, Rush Limbaugh, pill dispenser. Just a couple of the suggestions so far folks have come up with over at airamerica.com. Click on the Tom Hartman page, and you can post your idea to the blog. A couple things I want to share with you, and then we'll be coming back to your phone calls. Just from the news today, a few things that I think are really outrageous and a few things that I think are ominous. First of all, the ominous one. There's two articles about this in today's USA Today. It's right on the front page. U.S. is building database on Iraqis. Now, as I share this story with you, I want you to consider the possibility that our army is doing this right now in Iraq, particularly given that Posse Comitatus is suspended. Posse Comitatus is the law from the 1870s, the Reconstruction law, that said that never again, after the Civil War, never again will an American army shoot at Americans on American soil. Or any branch of the American military. Never again will any branch of the American military be used against Americans. And the Republicans in the last year, back when the Republicans still controlled the House and Senate, the Republicans passed a piece of legislation that suspended the Posse Comitatus Act, and Bush has signed it into the law, the Military Commissions Act. And so now the military has the ability to show up at your door or mine. So what if this is practice? Now that I've set up that admittedly rather paranoid frame, nonetheless, I mean, let's just look around. Sometimes even paranoids have people out to get them. So, U.S. is building database on Iraqis, biometrics, the key part of tracking suspects. This year, U.S. troops in Iraq are to receive 3,800 handheld scanners, up from 200 now in use, to equip every squad in the country, says Colonel Michael Meese, an advisor to Petraeus. Now, this is a handheld box. It's about the size of, I don't know, about twice the size of an iPhone, I guess, or, you know, it's the size of maybe three or four packs of cigarettes together. It's just, you know, it's a little larger than a handful, right? But it's a handheld device, and it has a little spot on it where you put your thumb. and it takes your thumbprint, and it's got a little camera on it, and you point it at a person's face, and a little red dot appears on their forehead. You push the button, and it takes a picture of their iris. It's an iris scan.
What's an iris?
And so it's so this is everybody's iris is unique. Everybody's eye is everybody's eye is unique, and the iris in answer to your question, David, is the blue of your eye or the brown of your eye, that's your iris, right? And every person's is unique, and so you take a picture of it, and you know you can recognize it's actually more accurate than a fingerprint. So the U.S. military is taking fingerprints and eye scans from thousands of Iraqi men and building an unprecedented database that helps track suspected militants. This by Thomas Frank in USA Today. Each handheld scanner costs $6,500 and can store records of up to 10,000 people. Information is then downloaded from the scanners and forwarded to a central database. Iraqis who refuse to give data can be barred from neighborhoods or markets that require an ID for entry. But virtually nobody refuses, says Colonel Meese. Fayath Abbas, 41, says he doesn't mind giving his fingerprint and eye scan at a checkpoint in Fallujah. He says, we can find out who's bad and who's good this way. So here we have the U.S. government. Hang on just a second here. I'm sorry. My screen just got blown away. Here we have the U.S. government going after or building a database, an identification database of Iraqis. Are you and I next? I mean, is this the precursor, or is this going to be used with the Real ID Act? Who knows? The Supreme Court yesterday, this is a story that got virtually no coverage. It's in today's Washington Post. I'm sorry, it was this wasn't today. This was a week ago. In the Washington Post, or earlier this week, the Supreme Court ruled that the Bush administration can open U.S. roads to Mexican trucks as soon as it wants. Labor environmental activists who fought to block the trucks from American highways said Congress might still erect more obstacles, but the administration praised the ruling as eliminating one of the last hurdles before the border is opened more widely than it is now. Joan Claybrook, president of Public Citizen, an advocacy group founded by Ralph Nader, says, this ruling gives a green light to allow trucks to cross the border with no regard for their effect on the environment. This is another Supreme Court, another disastrous Supreme Court ruling, which highlights the importance of the presidency. And finally, the last one that I just wanted to share with you, and I think that this is, frankly, a big deal that is not being discussed. There's a couple more that we'll get to as we continue through the day here. But this from the front page of today's Wall Street Journal. And it just so highlights, you know, what's going on with Michael Moore and Sicko, the movie, which you have to see. Sarah Rubenstein writing in the Washington Post, the headline, Industry Fights Switch to Generics for Epilepsy. And here's what's mind-boggling about this. It's just like, you know, every time I see one of these ads for the American Association for Retired Persons, AARP, saying, you can get our insurance card. I remember that the AARP lobbied in favor of that donut hole and in favor of the prescription, you know, the donut hole based prescription bill. Why? Because the AARP is primarily an insurance. They get most of their revenue from insurance income, and this is they're actually in bed with a company that paid with United Healthcare, the company that paid their CEO over $1 billion in compensation. And here it's the same deal. It's the same deal. The state legislature, in state legislatures across the country, the Epilepsy Foundation, another, people think it's a nonprofit for epilepsy, right? The Epilepsy Foundation has been campaigning for bills that would make it harder for pharmacists to switch patients to inexpensive generic epilepsy pills. The effort is getting behind the scenes support from drug companies, a sign of how the industry, long a potent lobbying force in Washington, is increasingly looking to states to achieve its goal. The foundation, a nonprofit group supported by the drug industry, says switching to the generics could cause dangerous seizures. Right. The FDA says nonsense. That's my comment. The way they wrote it, the Wall Street Journal, the Food and Drug Administration says it hasn't seen persuasive evidence for that. And it believes each generic is equivalent to the brand name drug it copies. Four major brand name drugs. Here's the kicker. Four major brand name drugs used for epilepsy are expected to lose patent protection and face generic competition between next year and 2010. Those four drugs generate around $5 billion in U.S. sales last year. Now, do you think that the mainstream television media that's so heavily supported by big ads from big pharmaceutical companies is going to cover this story the way the Wall Street Journal did? They go on to note, when a doctor writes a prescription for a brand name drug, pharmacists are usually permitted in most states to make an automatic switch to a generic judge equivalent by the FDA. The epilepsy legislation would carve out an exception to that rule. Around 25 states are considering some form of restriction, have considered some form of restriction in the past year. So here you have this front group for the drug industry, the Epilepsy Foundation, out there saying, oh, no. If a doctor writes a prescription for Topamax, which produced $1.825 billion in sales in 2006, you can't switch that to a generic that would cost a fragment of that. You can't do it. And save the consumer money. Because we've got to preserve the profits of the drug industry, after all. I mean, that's the top priority, the profits of the drug industry. Let's do a presidential straw poll in our next segment. I wanted to just pull this out really quick here so that none of the candidates will have an opportunity to start calling all of everybody and telling them to call in and vote in the straw poll. Lauren's going to go through all our callers right now and ask if they want to just, you know, toss out their name. And then I'm going to just... When you call, you will hear the phone ring and ring and ring, and when I hit the button, you will be on the air, and you just say the name of the candidate that you would vote for if the presidential election were held today. It could be a Republican. It can be a Democrat. So this is not just our primary. This is our everything. Who would you vote for president today if the election were being held? Our presidential straw poll. We'll be doing it right after the break, just for that segment. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Check it out. Also, drop by our blog at airamerica.com and click on Tom Hartman, and it'll take you right to the blog. And enter, you know, your thoughts on who should be doing what in America. You take that any way you want. We'll be right back.
Closing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
In olden days, a glimpse of stocking was looked on as something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
It's our Anything Goes Friday. We're going to be taking your calls on any topic you want after the bottom of the hour, but for the next 7-8 minutes here, we're going to do a presidential straw poll. David has his pen out. He's ready to start writing it down. And when you hear, you'll hear a funny little whoosh like that when you're call. Actually, you'll hear yourself suddenly on the air if you're dialing in. And that means that you are on the air. So who would you vote for president if the vote were today?
John Edwards.
Okay, John Edwards. There's one. Who would you vote for today?
Bill Richardson.
Okay, thank you. Who would you vote for today?
John Edwards.
Okay, and who would you vote for today?
John Edwards.
And who would you vote for today?
Barack Obama.
Okay, great. I'm also going to ask people to just, if you want, you can give your name real quick, but tell us the city you're calling from and who you would vote for. Where are you from and who would you vote for?
Irvine, California, and Dennis Kucinich.
Okay, where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Oakland, California, Barack Obama.
Thank you. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Daly City. I'd vote for Dennis Kucinich, Edwards ticket.
Okay, great. Thank you. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Santa Cruz. I'd vote for Gore first, but Edwards.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Bronx, New York, Dennis Kucinich.
Okay, thank you. And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Dennis Kucinich again.
Okay, great. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
I'd vote for Edwards Gore if he was running.
Okay, thank you. And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Hey, it's Jerry in San Diego. Dennis Kucinich.
Okay, thank you, Jerry. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Santa Rosa, Al Gore.
Thank you. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Moundsville, Illinois, and Gore Obama ticket.
Thank you. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Long Beach, California, Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Hi, this is Loretta from Brooklyn, New York, Barack Obama.
Thank you very much. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Springfield, Illinois, Joe Edwards.
Great. Thank you very much. And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Ron Paul.
Ron Paul. Thank you very much. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Campo, California, Al Gore.
Great. Thank you. And who would you be voting for? Whoop. That person just vanished. Who would you be voting for?
Obama, Barack.
Okay. I'm sorry. Say it again.
Obama.
Barack Obama. Okay, great. And who would you be calling for? Voting for?
I would vote for Mike Gravel. I'm calling from Boulder, Colorado.
Great. Thank you very much. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Jeff from Denver, Kucinich.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Portland, Oregon, Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you very much. And where are you voting for, calling from and who would you vote for? Okay. Thank you very much. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
New York City, John Edwards.
Great. Thank you, David. You missed that last one. It was the one before this one was also John Edwards. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Illinois, Kucinich, Gravel, ticket.
Thank you very much. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Atascadero, California, Dennis Kucinich.
Okay. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Barack Obama. I'm calling from Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Santa Cruz, Kucinich.
Thank you very much. And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Wanaka, New Jersey, John Edwards.
Thank you very much. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Memphis, Tennessee, world-famous Beale Street. And I wouldn't vote for Fred Thompson, man. God damn,
okay.
Man.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Misha, Garden Grove, California, John Edwards, Gore, if he runs.
Okay, thank you very much. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
I'm Stuart Roven from Los Gatos, California, and I'd vote for Al Gore.
Thank you very much. And who are you calling? Where are you calling from? And who would you vote for?
Alex in Detroit. I would vote for Kucinich.
Thank you very much. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Long Beach, California, Kucinich, Gravel ticket.
Okay, thank you very much. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Los Angeles, Dennis Kucinich.
Okay, where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Yeah, Tom, since you and Al Gore are on the ticket, this is Bluesman from Woodland, Washington, by the way. I vote for Edwards Kucinich.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Our number, by the way, 866-303-2270. Who are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Eugene. I'd vote for Obama and Richardson. Ticket.
Great. And Eugene, Oregon, I am assuming, on KOPT. Thank you very much. And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
San Francisco. Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Atlanta, Al Gore.
Thank you very much. And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for? Whoops. Didn't push the button there. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Dryden, New York, Edwards.
Thank you very much. And where are you calling from and who would you vote for?
Gail, Tampa, Florida, John Edwards, Gore, if he runs.
Thank you very much. And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Los Angeles, Edwards.
Thank you very much. And who would you be voting for today?
My name's Lynn. I'm from Eureka, California, and I'd be voting for Dennis Kucinich, absolutely.
Great. Thank you very much. And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Sleepy Hollow, New York. Gore, if he's running, Edwards, if he ain't.
Okay. And who would you be voting for?
My name is Shannon from Arkansas, and I'm voting for Gore, if he runs.
Okay, great. And where are you calling from, and who would you vote for?
Albuquerque, New Mexico, John Edwards, Gore, if he runs.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Where are you calling from, who would you vote for?
Joe from San Diego, I'd vote for Hillary.
Okay, great, thank you. Where are you calling from? Who would you vote for?
Denver, Colorado, John Edwards.
Great, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And where are you calling from? Who would you vote for? I guess we have to wrap it up. 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be back to your phone calls after this. We'll give you the results of our poll right after the break.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
It's good to be king, just for a while. To be there in velvet, yeah, to give them a smile. Get high and never come down. It's good to be king of your own little town.
See, I think this is George W. Bush's official song. And it shouldn't be. 34 minutes past the hour. Our winner, actually it's winners, it's plural, in our Tom Hartman program presidential straw poll today. No Republicans got a vote, oddly enough. Fred Thompson got an anti-vote. But other than that, let's see what we have here. Edwards and Kucinich are tied at 16 votes each, followed by Barack Obama, followed by Al Gore at 7 votes, Barack Obama at 6 votes, Hillary Clinton with 1 vote, Mike Gravel with 1 vote, and Richardson with 1 vote. Also, one Republican did get a vote. Ron Paul got a vote. And Bill Streetman, David? Hang on just a second. Let me open your mic. What's this?
I wasn't sure. I thought I caught a caller saying Bill Streetman. He said he was voting for a Republican. There was no way he was voting for Fred Thompson. And I threw it down, tried to get it right.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not sure what he said, actually. So anyhow, that's today. John Edwards and Dennis Kucinich winning by a significant, pulling ahead. Al Gore and Barack Obama in measurable second places. So it's interesting. It's just interesting. I mean, this is the chips fall where they may. You got no filter here at all, other than, people are willing to pick up the phone and dial in. By the way, some of the jobs being proposed over on our blog, you can get to this at airamerica.com and click on my name there, and it'll take you to our page and go to Louise's blog. She's asking the question, based on somebody else's blog, there's a link to that blog. What jobs should people be really doing? And Dick Cheney, sentry duty at the main gate in the Green Zone. He gets to return to the USA after the last soldier leaves Iraq. Don Rumsfeld, driving a garbage truck in Baghdad. He takes the same plane home as Cheney. So there's some good ideas there. And by the way, sometimes it just gets so very, very weird. Our crazy alert for the day. This yesterday in the United States Senate, the Senate has an opening prayer, and every day it's a different minister. And yesterday it was a Hindu priest. And here's what happened.
Today's opening prayer will be offered by a guest chaplain, Mr. Rajan Zed of the Indian Association of Northern Nevada.
Lord Jesus, forgive us, Father, for allowing the prayer of the wicked, which is an abomination in your sight.
The sergeant at arms.
That voice in the background yelling, Lord Jesus, forgive us for an abomination in your sight for allowing that. This is, I'm sorry, this guy doesn't represent any branch of Christianity that I know of.
Arms will restore order in the Senate.
We shall have no other God before you. You are the one
true. The sergeant at arms will restore order in the chamber.
Let us pray.
And then now here's the actual prayer.
We meditate on that transcendental glory of the Deity Supreme. Who?
The sergeant at arms will restore order in the Senate, in the chamber.
Let us pray. We meditate on the transcendental glory of the Deity Supreme, who is inside the heart of the earth, inside the life of the sky, and inside the soul of the heaven. May he stimulate and illuminate our minds. Lead us from the unreal to the real, from darkness to light.
It's a very, very simple prayer, but it was apparently a little too much for a few of the crazies who were hanging around the U.S. Senate. So, anyway. By the way, just a quickie here. This was in the Financial Times today. Actually, two quickies I want to share with you. Number one, the global shipping industry is responsible for 1.2 billion tons of carbon dioxide a year, more than twice what aviation emits. Everybody has thought that all the airplanes flying around the sky are the largest source of global carbon dioxide, or a significant one. Turns out the shipping industry is producing twice as much. This report by DK Group, which is developing technology to make ships more efficient, found shipping's emission were much higher than previously thought. The company reached the bigger estimate by including new vessels and by studying 7,749 vessels more than 175 meters long. So, and that, of course, is being driven by what? The fact that we're buying almost everything from China. And that was one story. Here's another one. This on the science that is showing up in again in the Financial Times. I mean, of all places. Natural selection has enabled butterflies on neighboring South Pacific Islands to fight back with extraordinary speed against male-killing bacteria. Within 10 generations, the proportion of male blue moon butterflies on Upolu and Savai in Samoa rose from 1% to 40% as a protective gene spread through the population. Sylvan Charlotte, lead author of the study, said, "To my knowledge, this is the fastest evolutionary change that has ever been observed. Observing evolution in real time." He's the lead author of the study. The Wolbachia bacteria live in the cells of female blue moon butterflies and infect their eggs. Before the eggs hatch, this bacteria selectively kills the male embryos, which are useless for their own, you know, for their own reproduction, therefore. And fortunately for the butterfly, the suppressor gene, which counteracts the bacteria's effect, has spread rapidly through the population. This is a gene between 2001 and 2006. In 2001, the ratio of male to female butterflies was 1 to 100. In other words, 99 out of every 100 male butterflies was killed before it could be born. And now the ratio is 4 to 6. It's 4 and 6. And so it's the vast majority of the butterflies being born now are immune to this bacteria. And because there's been this genetic change. Of course, don't try and tell a Republican that. Dave in Buffalo, New York. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hello, Tom. Thank you. Has it been proven that corporations no longer have personhood? And if that is true,
no,
they don't.
No, it has not been. No, corporations still have the rights of persons in the United States, by and large. It's alive and well. Corporate personhood.
I understand that, but I thought I heard you say one day that you had read the actual article in California by the robber barons, the railroad companies, and they put a cover page to the ruling that was different than what the body of the text said.
Yes, that's been proven. I wrote an entire book on that called Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights, which is in print. You can find it over at TomHartmann.com.
Okay.
And on my website, you'll find several chapters of that book that you can simply read online for free, along with an actual photograph of the handwritten correspondence between the clerk of the court and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in the 1886 Santa Clara County case. And yes, the Supreme Court did not rule that corporations are persons, and the clerk of the court, who was in the pocket of the robber barons and the railroad moguls, slipped that into the headnote, which has no legal standing. That has been proven. But there have been 37, 38 Supreme Court rulings since then that quoted the headnote. And so while that case, the Santa Clara County case, didn't become precedent, didn't establish it as law, all those cases since then have.
So what do we do?
Well, we have to. There's a variety of things that could be done. One, we can convince the Supreme Court to change it. Now, that's going to be a real challenge since Roberts and Alito are really in tight with the Federalist Society. And, you know, Roberts in particular is a big advocate of corporate personhood. And so, you know, now is not the time to take it to the Supreme Court. Another option is to pass laws. A series of good laws that could roll back at least a lot of the effects of corporate personhood. Another one would be to amend the Constitution to change the 14th Amendment to insert the word natural before the word person in the 14th Amendment so that it is very clear that the 14th Amendment does not refer to artificial persons, which is the legal definition of a corporation.
Great.
The 14th Amendment just says all persons shall have equal protection under the law. And it was, you know, badly written. It was hastily written after the Civil War. They had to write the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to basically outlaw slavery. And it should have said natural persons, and it doesn't. And that's the loophole that they've used. But the guys who wrote it, even, I mean, a couple of the Republicans who were on the committee that wrote the 14th Amendment actually made a career in the 1880s of traveling around telling the big corporate moguls and Republican trade groups that they had intentionally slipped that in so corporations could become persons. But the fact of the matter is the deliberations of the committee are now, you know, public. They've been printed. And you find that the committee never even considered that. They thought they were ending slavery, you know, period. So, there's a variety of ways to challenge this. One of the best groups out there that's doing it is the CELDEF, C-E-L-D-F, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. CELDEF.org, CELDF.org. And they've got over 100 cities in Pennsylvania that have actually passed laws against corporate personhood. And this is the kind of thing that could get it to the Supreme Court. So, Dave, I hope that's useful to you. If you go to TomHartmann.com and click on the corporate personhood link, you'll find an entire website I built around this topic. Michael in West Covina, California. Hey, Michael, got about a half a minute
Tom,
before we got to take a break.
Real quick, I want to thank you for your intelligent perspective and worldview. I think you're an essential addition to an unfair and unbalanced media at this point. And I hope to hear you're running for office one day. But as far as a great ticket, I think Gore will eventually run. And I think
you really think so?
He does, and Gore and him are on the same ticket, or Hillary, which puts a three-person dream team at the White House.
Yeah,
I think either choice is gonna probably solidify the next four terms in the White House, which would give us a long time and a lot of opportunity to make a lot of changes.
Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I would vote for Al Gore in a heartbeat, and I think probably most Americans would. I think that Al Gore is absolutely a very, very strong and viable candidate. Problem is, I mean, he came here to Portland to do Unpleasant Truth thing, or his movie, you know, his whole. And I introduced him, and I moderated a Q&A with the audience, and somebody asked him, his Inconvenient Truth, will you run? And he said, I don't think so. And I really got the sense he didn't want to. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
Nine and a half minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. On this day in history, the Democratic National Convention nominated Senator John F. Kennedy for President of the United States. Interesting. John F. Kennedy. By the way, over at Democratic Underground, there's all this blah, 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 going on about Hillary Clinton and John Edwards had an off-mic conversation where there was a hot mic. And I think that it's really interesting, the discussion about this. And one of the posts over at Democratic Underground says, I know some are anxiously looking for a scandal here, but past history suggests they were very likely talking about cutting down on the number of debates and forums. So they were talking about cutting back on something. Nobody knows what. This is what Hillary Clinton was likely referring to when she says, we've got to get back to it. Obama, Hillary, Edwards campaigns. There's no evidence that they were seeking to limit the number of candidates in the debate. This is a swift boat style myth made out of whole cloth and being peddled on Democratic Underground and other places by those people who would like to see Hillary Clinton or John Edwards falter. That's interesting. And this is, I mean, this, you look at the Democratic debates, and it's a very, very intense schedule. I mean, April 26th, June 3rd, June 28th, August 14th, September 9th, September 23rd, October 21st, October 30th, November 15th, December 10th, December 17th, January 9th, January 2000, and January 31st, 2000. All that stuff. And then plus there's the forums where they all show up. You know, February 1 through 3, February 21, March 24, March 28, April 10, April 18, April. And basically, I'm guessing, and I think this is probably a legitimate statement, is that what they were saying is, let's just cut back on the number of these things, not the candidates. I just can't believe that that's where they were going on that. And that's, so, anyhow, Victoria Jones with us on the line from the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, the website. Hey, Victoria, what's happening in Washington, D.C. today?
Well, it's fairly quiet, which is nice because it's a Friday in July. And Fridays in July and Fridays in August and 130 degrees was one of the things that were being discussed at the briefing today as we talked about whether it was possible for the Iraqis to reach A grades in all the 18 benchmarks that are being set out for it by the September report card given by Petraeus and the ambassador. And it was interesting, really, pretty much the entire briefing revolved around Iraq and the report card and what it was possible for Iraq to do in this time. And listening to Tony Snow basically dance around this, and the point was being made that the government over there is taking all of August off. How is it going to be possible for them to possibly get up to speed in the time?
Well, and not only that, the government over there isn't even a government anymore. You've got so many of the elected officials simply not showing up anymore. Many of them have fled the country with their families. You've got others who are, you know, obviously intimidated. You've got huge battles going on within and among the elected officials, and even within Maliki's cabinet, that have essentially paralyzed the government. They haven't been able to do anything.
Well, this is it. They haven't been able to do anything, and they're certainly not going to be able to do anything in the next 8 weeks. So if we do see changes in the grades on the report cards, it'll be very interesting. We will see, my prediction is we will see changes in the grades on the report cards, and there probably will be some marginal grinding along of inexorable change, because nothing does stay the same in this universe. But yeah, it'll be incremental, and it won't mean very much, but it'll be spun faster than the spinning top.
Well, I think we'll see changes in the grades in the report card the same way that the former Surgeon General said that he was required to insert President Bush's name 3 times every page in every one of his speeches.
This is the most extraordinary thing I've heard all week.
Yeah,
and I hear extraordinary things every week.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling, isn't it? I mean, this is Senator Bernie Sanders is telling us about it in the last hour. He was he will not vote in for the new guy that the Bushies are putting up, because he just asked him straight up, will you stand up to this kind of pressure? And the guy would not answer yes. So
he would not answer yes?
That's correct.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, even the Everett Koop was up there. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
This was an astonishing thing. I had no idea this hearing was coming up, actually. So I was blown away by the entire thing, and I saw the guy on the NewsHour, and he was completely convincing. Clearly,
yeah,
a guy who just wanted to get on with his job, do no harm to anybody, and just do the gig, and found himself in this extraordinary position of being blocked at every turn.
Yeah. Yeah, and having words put in his mouth by political hacks. This administration does not hire people to do the jobs of government because they don't believe in government. And you can't govern if you don't believe in government. I mean, it goes back to Reagan's famous...
I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
I mean, they really and truly don't believe in government as having any function other than putting people in jail or fighting wars.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
that's an astonishing statement, Tom.
And so they're just they put into place people who are basically political hacks all the time in all cases under all circumstances, rather than people who are actually competent in doing the job. So for the weekend, all members of Congress are either just, you know, laying low, or they're going back home to their districts.
They're laying low. They're going back home to their districts. Each time they go back home to their districts, they get more flack about Iraq. And so
yeah,
they come back and they try and think about, are they going to adjust their vote further? Which way are they going to, jump? On the next vote on Iraq, because as we know, the Democrats will continue to bring up votes on Iraq until they go into recess, which is very soon. And for the Republicans, it couldn't be soon enough.
Yeah, I've got to figure out how to get a hold of Ben Cohen, of formerly of Ben and Jerry's, and suggest to them. A listener emailed a suggestion to me that they come out with a new ice cream flavor, a peach and mint combination called Peachment. I thought it was a good one too. Ah, yes, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks a lot, Victoria. Good talking to you.
Thanks very much.
57 minutes past the hour. We're going to continue with your phone calls on Anything Goes Friday. Right after the news at the top of the hour. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
Welcome back to the third hour of our program. Sometimes it's really important, in my opinion, to say congratulations, well done. To catch people doing things right instead of just always trying to catch people doing things wrong, which is how most incompetent managers manage, is by, you know, looking for opportunities to poke people rather than praise them. And so I'd like to catch Jack Murtha doing something right. Yeah, he's our jolly good fella for the day. Jack Murthy yesterday, when he was asked by Wolf Blitzer about his thoughts on George W. Bush's speech about how wonderful everything is in Iran.
All right, what do you say to the president?
Well, it's delusional, to say the least. As I said earlier, and you heard me say, it's a failed policy wrapped in illusion.
And he continues at some length and brilliantly, Jack Murtha, pointing out this just plain old flat out ain't working. It ain't working. We also have a piggies alert for you today.
It's 291 billion pounds, Dr. Calculus.
Well, let me see. That would be 145 million and a half tons of the
refuse.
Yeah, refuse. Yes. Per every day, and by the year, let me figure, over 53 million tons of
manure?
Manure, yeah. By comparison, the pyramid of the pharaoh Cheops weighs about 690 million tons, which means that every four and three, you've got a pile of this,
excrement.
Yeah.
Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white sheds? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt.
It's the bigger piggies.
Always have clean shirts.
And they always have clean shirts. In appreciation to the Farside Theater and the Beatles. The Blackstone Group. This is from today's New York Times, an article by David K. Johnston. The Blackstone Group, the big buyout firm, has devised a way for its partners, which is basically rich guys, mostly rich white guys, has devised a way for its partners to effectively avoid paying taxes on $3.7 billion. The bulk of what it raised last month from selling shares to the public. Although they will initially pay $553 million in taxes, the partners will get that back and about $200 million more from the government over the long term. This is like an annuity. In fact, Lee Shepard, a tax lawyer, says these guys have figured out how to turn paying taxes into an annuity. She says, what people don't realize is that the private equity managers, the investment bankers, all the financial intermediaries are in control of their own taxation. And so the debate in Washington about what tax rate to pay misses the big picture. See, the reality is right now, if you make a lot of money in America doing normal work, you know, if you're at the top end of the tax rate, you pay a maximum 35% income tax. But if you make your money through capital gains or dividends, if you make your money sitting on your butt around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, or in this case, putting together a buyout firm, you're taxed at a maximum 15% rate. And if you're really good, you can figure out how to get the government to give all that back plus more. Plus, you can make a fair amount of money. Stephen Schwarzman, the co-founder of the Blackstone Group, made nearly $400 million last year, for example. Now, is this just the Blackstone Group? No. David K. Johnston, writing the New York Times, says the Fortress Investment Group, which went public in February, uses a form of this tax structure. Two funds that plan to go public soon, Kohlberg Kravis Roberts and the Akazif Capital Management, describe similar tax strategies in their preliminary disclosure documents. Isn't that sweet? You raise $3.7 billion, you pay $500 million in taxes, and you get back that $500 million in taxes, plus the government gives you an additional $200 million. Man, good work if you can get it, right? Incredible. Absolutely incredible. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. It's Anything Goes Friday. We can talk about anything you'd like. Carol in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Carol, what's on your mind today?
Well, I just thought I had a pretty good idea. You know how our government votes in their own raise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think since we're their boss, that we the people should insist on changing that. And since they seem to be driven by money, that we should get to vote on if they get a raise or a decrease, depending on what a good job they do for we the people.
Yeah.
I mean, how many bosses do you know go up to somebody and say, well, how much of a raise do you want?
It's an interesting point. The practical problem is that you say, you know, they're interested in money. They're interested in money for their campaign reelection funds. We're talking about millions, in some cases tens of millions, in some cases even, you know, over $100 million that some of these guys are raising. And in some cases they can use it for their own personal benefit. After they leave Congress, they can roll these funds over in ways that they can use them, or they put their wife on the payroll for a huge salary, or their husband or whatever. It's just, we need to get all the money out of elections, period, and just go to public financing of campaigns. As to their paychecks, don't you think we should just say you're fired or not?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. I am totally disgusted with this government.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, frankly, it's not for lack of trying. I mean, I think that the Democrats are making some very good efforts, but boy, they still have a long way to go. Carol, thank you for the call. It's Gordy in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Gordy.
Hi. I'm upset with all of the media. Bar none. The fact that they don't look underneath the rocks, we should be used to the kind of tricks that the government plays. But this last business about Chertoff, and the fact that he, the business about his feeling of a terror in his gut. Well,
yeah.
Because the administration always tries to frighten us if there's something wrong. And that morning in the paper, there was an article about all of the top heads. There were between 30 and 35 of the top executives and scientists missing from every single one of Chertoff's departments, including FEMA. And nobody picked. So, of course, he comes at the end of the night. How do we distract people? Oh, gee, they're going to have an attack. And nobody tied those two together.
Oh, that's, you know, I didn't even see that report.
On the front page of our paper.
Oh, that's interesting. It didn't make it here, and I don't claim omniscience. I not everything, you know, but wow. So there was a bad report out the same day that Skeletor said, "I got a gut feeling a terrorist attack is coming." Was the same day that there was a report came out critical of him.
Exactly. Yeah.
So this is just political butt covering. I thought that he was trying to scare people on behalf of the Bush administration. Apparently, he was just trying to do it on behalf of himself. Gee, we shouldn't be surprised. Gordy, thanks for the tip on that. That's astounding. Gunner in Long Beach, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Gunner, what's up?
Tom, you're the best. I would like you to develop and or amplify on something that you said earlier, and that is that the Senate should simply filibuster any war funding bills that don't include timelines for withdrawals. Bush says he'll veto anything that does. I think the Senate should make a commitment that they'll filibuster any bills related to the war funding that don't include timelines for withdrawals or immediate withdrawal for that matter.
I agree, and that's the direction that they need to go, and I think, frankly, that they may be slowly moving in that direction. It's in a way tragic that our elected officials are behind the people rather than ahead of the people. On the other hand, you know, it's really how democracy is supposed to work. If we always got instant gratification, it could actually be a very dangerous thing if our political system, you know, just bent to the whim of the will of the people this month. You know, it's the fact that it takes a year or so. You know, it's a tragedy in a war. This obviously, you know, this war never should have been fought in the first place. But we also, go ahead.
You know, 16 for Kucinich to 1 for Hillary in your last poll. You know where your listeners stand. I would really appreciate if you would develop this over weeks until it gets done.
I have been talking about it from day one. I mean, back when that funding bill was before Congress and that they ultimately passed to give Bush the money that he wanted for another year, I was taking the same position that John Edwards and Dennis Kucinich was, which is that they should keep sending back that piece of legislation that says, here's a little bit of money that you can use to get our troops out of Iraq. Period.
Keep sending it back.
And I pounded on that every single day.
I heard you say that. I thought you were crazy. I thought they would come back with something even stronger after the veto. And I was so disappointed when they went. And I said, wow, Tom was really right. You know, they went the other way. I mean, they totally caved.
I know.
Thanks,
I know. And yeah, you're welcome. Thanks a lot, Gunner, for the call. That was my point. I knew that, they couldn't have done something stronger. Because that had already gotten shot down. So they should have simply said, well, here it is. Here it is again. Here it is again. Here it is again. And eventually Bush would have to, you know, it was a game of chicken, and Congress blinked first. We'll see if it happens again. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is
the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Radio operator, do you ever think of me? 'Cause I'm a gleam on some horizon, just too far away to see. Radio operator, there are still messages to send from the future.
21 minutes past the hour. Well, let's see. Over at the some of the suggestions for new jobs for people. Over at our blog at airamerica.com on the Tom Hartman page. Click my name and it'll get you to our page and you'll see the, you know, every day there's a blog and we always pick one out. Well, not always, but we are today as well as they have been fairly regularly lately. Pick out David's favorite posting for the day and we'll send that person a copy of Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, my new book. So anyhow, some of the suggestions. Bill O'Reilly, polygraph tester. Ann Coulter, ambassador to Antarctica. Rush Limbaugh, Isuzu sales. George Bush and Dick Cheney, license plate manufacturers. So there's some possibilities. There's some possibilities there. 1-866-303-2270, our phone number. Hilda in Manhattan. Hey, Hilda, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hi, Hilda.
Hi, you're breaking up. Thank you for taking my call. It's been worth waiting for an hour. I was your first straw poll responder for Edward.
Okay.
I went with New York Civil Liberties Union. Actually, it was a national lobbying day on the 26th, and we went to D.C. to lobby our various New York State senators and our House reps. The first thing on our agenda, Jerry Nadler and John Conyers introduced two bills, which you might be acquainted with. One is Restoring the Constitution Act of 2007, H.R. 1415 and Senate 576, and Habeas Corpus Restoration Act, H.R. 1416 and Senate 185. Do you know about these bills?
I do, yes.
Oh, so I shouldn't read...
Well, feel free. You can't read from the legislation itself. Everybody would fall asleep. But if you want to make a point about them,
this is excerpted. Yeah. The first thing we started out with the Military Commissions Act, we'll go back to. But restoring the Constitution, which of course you know Bush has ignored it, and we should fly flags at half mast. This bill ends indefinite detention. The RCA fixes the problem that the MCA caused and undermined in the Constitution and the rule of law. It restores habeas corpus and due process at Guantanamo Bay and to other detainees held indefinitely by the federal government.
And not just in the United States, but all over the world as well.
Yeah.
And that's the really important point here about H.R. 1415 and H.R. 1416.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's interesting, the Constitution doesn't mention citizens. You know,
it mentions
persons.
Well,
the only place it mentions citizens is in the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, well, that's the Military Commissions Act, which has nothing to do with just... But anyway, we went there to try to get our congresspersons to sign on to the bill, and we found that there were some that had not. So if anyone knows their congressperson and wants to know who did not vote for it yet, all the Republicans voted against it, which is not surprising. And we have yet to get Timothy Bishop, Steve Israel, I won't count Peter Kill, King, Carolyn McCarthy, Gary Ackerman.
You're talking about New York State.
These are New York State.
New York State congressman.
So I don't know if you want me to read, if people, you know.
Well, your point is well taken, Hilda, I didn't realize that there had been a bill on a vote on the floor of the House on these things. I thought that they hadn't yet come to a vote. We're talking about House Resolution 1415 and 1416.
These are for co-sponsors for the
Right. You're looking for co-sponsors.
That's
right.
What we're desperately looking
And the bottom line is that basically once a bill has enough co-sponsors that it could be passed once it's released out into the House, then the committees just kind of rubber stamp it and it gets a vote. And so good point. Hilda, thank you very much. And you made it very well. House Resolution 1415 and House Resolution 1416 to basically restore our rights. And we'll be talking more about those as time goes on. Charles in Oakland, California, listening on the Quake. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Hey. I'm calling about the guest you had yesterday who was talking about the other war, the war on civilians. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
And I'm wondering if you remembered an incident that happened in Basra in October 2005. It was when six tanks broke into a Basra city jail supported by helicopter gunships to rescue two British special operatives.
Yes, we talked about that on this program day before yesterday.
I'm sorry?
We talked about that on this program day before yesterday.
Oh, you did.
The two British guys who were in an Arab costume.
That's right.
And had explosives in the back of their car.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
They got busted by the Iraqi police,
right.
And the British literally smashed the jail to rescue these guys. It's
well, that story
very
wasn't
bizarre.
Reported. You know, I only found out the second half of it the last 5 months, and so it's.
Yeah.
It seems to me to be an incident of false flag terrorism.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And it's certainly that you know, again, we don't know all the details. We do know those details, and those details we know with some accuracy. But, you know, the British government has been totally quiet on this, and of course the mainstream media has been totally quiet on this. So, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. I have a feeling it's not going to go anywhere though. I don't think that there's going to be any. Certainly the Americans are not going to investigate it. The Iraqi government, the puppet government over there, they're not going to investigate the Brits. All the more reason for us to get out. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
Anything goes. It's our Anything Goes Friday, and I'm going to take microphones, speakers, precedence, or whatever, and toss out my Anything Goes. Joe Lieberman, this is, first of all, just consider for a moment. I'm going to rant about Joe Lieberman here in just a second, but I want to set this up. Lieberman and Bush want us to believe that the biggest thing we have to fear is people who are motivated by the belief in an afterlife that causes them to be willing to kill themselves. In other words, suicide bombers. That the suicide bombers so strongly believe that in some time after their own death, everything will be wonderful, that they are willing to do insane things. Okay, you following me on this? The suicide bombers believe that at some point after their own death, that they will be ushered into heaven, the 72 virgins, whatever, you know, and therefore they're willing to do crazy things like blowing themselves up along with killing innocent people. Now, that's a fact. I mean, I would agree with that characterization. That's my characterization, in fact. But here's where it gets weird. Here's where it gets really weird. Lieberman and Bush want us to believe, on the one hand, that people who think that way are the greatest threat to America. And I agree that they are a threat to America. I don't think that they're the greatest threat to America by any stretch of the imagination. I think that I don't think that, frankly, they're even close to the threat to us of losing our civil liberties. But that's a whole other discussion. But they want us to believe that that's the greatest threat to America. People who believe that what happens after they die is more important than what happens right now while they're alive. Following this? Now, remembering that, consider this comment that Joe Lieberman made yesterday afternoon on a right-wing radio show. The host said, this is Hugh Hewitt, the host said, how do you think history is going to evaluate George W. Bush? Lieberman. I know the polls are down, but I think on the largest issue of our time, which is the rise of Islamist extremism, that he will be judged as the president who saw the threat, and in the midst of an unpopular war, he stuck with it. So I think overall, over time, his ratings among the historians will be greater than his ratings in the polls today. Now, this is the same. This is essentially the same thing as what Rush Limbaugh said back in May, where he said, and I quote, "Long after we're all dead and gone." Are you starting to notice a thread here, by the way, of maybe we really need to worry about the people who are most concerned about what's going to happen when we're dead and gone, rather than the people who are concerned about what's going on right now? Limbaugh, long after we're all dead and gone, when historians who are not yet born begin to write about this era, they're going to place George Bush in the upper echelon of presidents who had a great vision for America, who looked beyond our shores, who didn't just restrict himself to domestic policy niceties. If the terror that we have to worry about is people who base their actions in the here and now on how things are going to be after everybody who is here and now is dead and gone, or how they're going to think of us, I'm very concerned. I mean, I think there's something to be said about the, you know, the old Iroquois notion of, you know, every decision has to be made in the context of its impact on the seventh generation, but that's a little different. Actually, it's a lot different. 1-866-303-2270, your telephone number. TJ in Denver, Colorado. Hey, TJ, what's up?
How are you doing?
Say what?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Fine. What's up?
I was just calling because I was curious why there's so much, progressive support for Hillary Clinton and Al Gore when, well, Hillary Clinton has been, she kind of been pandering to the insurance companies, and then with Al Gore, from my understanding, he was one of the big advocates for the WTO and NAFTA treaties. Not only that, he also was a big advocate for the what we jokingly call the Clean Air Agreement or Act. And
I was just kind of wondering. I think that with regard to Al Gore, I believe that Al Gore has been completely radicalized by his experience since the presidency was stolen from him, and I don't think that we should or can appropriately and reasonably judge him by his positions prior to that time. Although I would like to know what his position is today on NAFTA. It would be my first question if he was going to run for president. But, you know, the bottom line is he's not running for president. With regard to Hillary Clinton, I can only speak for myself. Of the candidates who are running, she is not my first choice. She's not even my second or third or fourth choice. That said, if she is the Democratic nominee, she will make a better president than any of the Republicans who are running, and I would work to get her elected.
I agree with you that she's better than any of the Republicans, but at the same time, a lot of people get this misconception that this is a two-party state. When as a matter
it
of
is.
Fact, there's several parties. I mean,
no, TJ, it's not a misconception. TJ, it's not a misconception. It's real. We have our form of government, along with seven other countries in the world, Greece. To arguably, to some extent, the United Kingdom and Canada, New Zealand and Australia, and there's one or two others out there, or maybe it's seven altogether, have first past the poll winner take all elections. We are a two party state, and when this country was put together, James Madison, the father of the Constitution, the guy who kept the records for the Constitutional Convention, who spent 5 years studying constitutions before he started, he realized what a terrible thing that was. And if you go back and you read Federalist, I think it's number 10. It might be Federalist 24. It's one of the, or it might be 14. It's one of those three, but I'm pretty sure it's Federalist number 10. He talks about the danger of political parties emerging, because if political parties emerged, there would only be two parties. Because if three parties emerged, and then you could have 34%, if the vote were equally distributed, you could have 34% of the people ruling everybody else. If four parties emerged, you could have 26% of the people ruling everybody else. If five parties emerged, you could have 21% of the people ruling everybody else. And he saw this as a terrible danger. And he didn't know what to do about it. He didn't have a solution. So the best he could come up with was to beg people not to form factions or political parties, which is what he wrote about in that Federalist paper. And it wasn't until 1861 that John Stuart, TJ, I'm sorry, the noise, I gotta put you on hold here for just a second because Chris is not riding the pot here. He was so freaked out about this that in Federalist number 10, he begged us not to form political parties or what he called factions. And as I said, you can go back and read it, because he realized that what they were creating was something that if it became, if political parties emerged, there could really only be two of them. And that's the problem that we have right now. So, TJ, let me bring you back in. The two solutions to this are either you go with proportional representation, which is what they have done in virtually every other democracy in the world. John Stuart Mill invented this in 1861, you know, where the party that gets 30% of the vote gets 30% of the seats. Or you go with instant runoff voting, which is what Australia and New Zealand have done to fix their problem. But we don't have that here. Your turn.
Well, I don't know. It's just kind of, to be quite honest, where I stand on it is if Hillary does get it, then I'm going to have to vote Green or, you know, some other third party, because I have to vote for somebody who speaks for what I believe in, and I don't see Hillary as being one of those, or Gore, for that matter.
Yeah, well, I salute and admire your idealism, and speaking as somebody who voted for Ralph Nader in 2000, I understand it. And, you know, that said, although I lived in Vermont, which was a safe state, so I felt like it was a safe vote, but nonetheless, that said, if because we have this flawed system, I think that rather than, first of all, I support the Green Party strongly, and I encourage people to support the Green Party, particularly at the local level, and get involved with the Green Party and the Democratic Party. But, you know, instead of simply saying that, you know, hey, I support the Democratic Party and they're, you know, right or wrong, you know, true blue, blah, blah, my position is that what we need to do if we don't think the Democratic Party is representing us well is not to walk away from it, but to infiltrate it and take it over. And so I'd say if you don't think that the Democratic candidates are reflecting your values or doing what you want, and frankly, some of them are pretty good. I mean, if Dennis Kucinich, John Edwards, I think are excellent candidates. Excellent candidates. And you know, time will tell. If Al Gore gets into the race and you know, there will be some kind of a shakeout, we'll find out what his positions are, just like the Republicans are going to have to figure out, you know, what Fred Thompson's all about. But, you know, show up at the party meetings. Get involved. Get active. Participate. It's just voting isn't enough anymore. It's just not enough anymore. Eddie in Birmingham, Alabama. Hey, Eddie, got about a minute before I got to take a break. What's up?
It's Edie in Montgomery.
Oh, Edie, I'm sorry, in Montgomery.
We're okay. Sending out an SOS here in Montgomery because the powers that be will not allow Sicko to be played in the theaters.
Michael Moore's movie?
And a name. If folks will call and help us out.
Are you okay, there? You're not. Yeah, Edie, you're not going to give out the number of the theater.
It's a complaint number and a name for, you know, suggestions to, you know, see if we can get it played here.
Okay, well, you know, rather than is it your one of your local theaters? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, it's local.
Yeah. Okay.
Theater,
let's just rather encourage people to contact their local theaters, because I don't want to just go after one company willy nilly. Let's make this an entire national thing. Edie, anybody in Montgomery, Alabama, contact your local theaters and say, hey, we want to see Sicko, and frankly, anybody anywhere else in the country where there's not a local theater that's playing Michael Moore's movie Sicko, contact all of your local theaters and say, I want to see Sicko. Bring it in. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, special thanks to Louise Hartman, to my producer David Poole, to Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirshner at Air America, to Ben at White Rose Society, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website. To Mike Dirks here at KPOJ in Portland, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening to our program. Much appreciated. Congratulations, by the way, to Lore, L-O-R-E, blogging over at airamerica.com on the Tom Hartman page. We are going to send you, Lore, a copy of Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, for your post to the blog today titled The Media Doesn't Support American Values. Very, very well said, and thank you very much for saying it. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Terry in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Terry.
Tom, thank you for all what you do.
You're welcome.
Observations, if you will. One dealing with the magic bullet theory of the Kennedy assassination. The other dealing with Michael Moore versus the media. This is funny because if the media could so easily put him out of business, if they would merely even come close to doing their job, which is informing us. But they are so woefully inadequate in informing us that Michael Moore's movies are brilliant and they're fascinating. But
yeah.
Back
in the days when news reporters actually did investigative reporting, regardless of whose toes it may step on, which corporate sponsor's toes it may step on, and could claim correctly that, hey, I can't worry about what the corporate sponsors say because there's a firewall between sales and news. Back in that day, you know, the old joke about, you know, it's going to be a bad day, the old joke inside the business community about, you know, it's going to be a bad day when you show up for work and the 60 Minutes film crew is there, was true. It's not true anymore, as you point out, and so it takes somebody like Michael Moore to come along and tell the truth about what's going on. Absolutely.
Right.
Good point.
You tell us stuff we should already know. Now, about the magic bullet theory. Now, there's been a recent onslaught of TV shows trying to prove that magic bullet theory is correct, but it's so funny because they're showing you minute details of the Zapruder film, and right. In it, of course, the magic bullet theory dictates that the first bullet that hits Kennedy also hits Connolly.
Right, but after it pauses in midair for 1.7 seconds and then makes a 90-degree turn and all these weird things.
But the proof that it doesn't hit him is right there in the film, because after Kennedy's hit, come out from the sign, you see Connolly turning back and forth, and while he's doing it, he lifts his right hand, which is also struck by that so-called magic bullet. It shatters his wrist in five places, yet he picks up his hand and holding his hat with his wrist intact. That totally blows...
Right.
You know, totally different.
No, I mean, everybody knows that. Do you know who came up with the magic bullet theory, Terry?
I do. It's Arlen Specter.
There you go. Good old Arlen Specter. Yep, he was the counsel to the committee. Thanks. Our trivia 101 question for the day. Dave in Long Beach, California. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Oh, hi. I just wanted to talk about Michael Chertoff and how paranoid he's got us all.
Skeletor, yes. Apparently there was a report that came out the very day that he had a bad gut feeling that pointed out that he was doing a lousy job of running the Department of Homeland Security. His division of it.
Did you read Paul O'Neill's book?
I can't say that I read every word in it, but I spent a fair amount of time with it. Why?
It struck me as funny. He talked about on 9/11 he was... either in or going to, like, Far East, I think, for a conference, and I think a lot of cabinet officers were with him.
Right.
And I thought it was funny because about half of JFK's cabinet was heading to Japan, on November 22.
Oh, that's interesting.
It's
weird. Dave, thanks a lot for that one. Darko in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, what's up?
Hey, Mr. Genius, I've been waiting for a long time to talk to you. And actually, we met briefly at a party in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
And I offered my services to help you with the Croatian language and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, since we met, I enjoy your show specifically tremendously. But let me
tell you,
I've been really busy because as much good information as you provide, I just wasn't happy. So I have dug deep, very deep into many areas. And a lot of people would say, well, it's just a conspiracy theory and all this. But let me tell you, I have the glue that connects everything.
You have found the conspiracy of the people who are running the entire planet? Is that the thing?
Well, I am not really professional in this field. But like I said, I have done a lot of research. What I would primarily like to do, and you know that knowledge is the key to the kingdom, what I would like to share with you, as well as other people, are resources that I have come
across. Well, Darko, if you can do it in about 20 seconds, because I've only got a couple minutes left, and I got a bunch of other callers I want to get to, too. You got a quick URL or something?
Come back to me?
Yeah,
okay.
we'll have to come back another time then. Brian in Boulder, Colorado. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hi, Tom. A couple of quick points and then one with a little more detail. Campaign finance reform, and which we've mentioned today, and also removing personhood from corporations. I think those are really extremely important.
They're at the top of the list.
I think they are. And then right almost with them is, I think, 9/11 truth. And I know that a few days ago you mentioned that you were looking to do a program on that and that you couldn't find anyone to take the opposing view. I think that...
we're working with the guys over at 911truth.org to try and track somebody down. We're working on it, Brian.
People need
I agree. I absolutely agree. We're working on it. We're going to do a show on it. We're going to do it. Anyhow, coming up Monday on the program, Dan Gilbert is here to tell us that the Democrat political agenda is to break down America's family values. This should be an interesting conversation. Tara McKelvey is here, monstering inside America's policy of secret interrogations and torture in the terror war. Terry O'Sullivan on labor issues, and as always, the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. Get out there. Get active. Have a great weekend. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.